south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, back in the saddle again. Even though I don't much like horses. Oh, I admire them, all right, and the people who ride them. But somehow I just look at those spindly legs and I'm thinking, the physics there just doesn't look right. Anyway, here's a little cultural heads up for anyone who comes down here to Latin America and goes shopping in a supermarket. If you've noticed, any big or medium-sized supermarket has baggers. And note that especially in the bigger supermarkets, you can hardly bag the stuff yourself. There'll always be some guy there doing it. Or even if there isn't, by the time you're all tallied up and paying the bill, chances are, out of nowhere, a little guy will run up and start packing your stuff in your cart and sort of take command of it and follow you into the parking lot, whether you like it or not. And some of these guys seem kind of forceful. I didn't like that at first. Now, I have to admit, when that first started happening to me, I started to resist. I'd say, nah, I'll do it. I don't need any help. What am I, an invalid or something? Hey, I might be old, but I don't actually look like a senior citizen. I don't look my age. Of course, no one cards me anymore, man. It's been years. Nor does any establishment ever offer me a senior discount. People do say I look 10 years younger than I really am. That's what people tell me anyway, unless, of course, they're just being kind. So anyway, you know, for a long time I resisted. I wouldn't let anyone help me take my bags out to the car. Oh, and one more thing. Those little guys know if you're just buying one or two items, they're not going to help you take it out to the car. That's not going to happen. They're going to concentrate on people who've got lots of stuff and lots of bags. There's a good reason for that, besides the obvious. It would look pretty lame if all you bought were some grapes and a papaya and someone else carried it out to the car for you. That would be ridiculous and downright rude. Well, here's what I didn't know, and I'm giving you a heads up on it right now. Be advised that in the grocery store, the little guys that bag your stuff and try to take it out to the parking lot for you, in most all cases, they get no salary at all. Now, of course, the cashiers do, but if you notice, they'll never offer to take your stuff out to the car. They may bag one or two things if you're just buying a small amount of stuff, but they're not going to take it out to your car. They cannot leave the register. They're on salary. It's the other guys, the little bagger guys. And I didn't realize this for a long, long time. They make no money at all except on tips. But there's no signs to indicate that. No one mentions it. Now, of course, how are you going to know that? The only reason I found out is because one of my Latin American girlfriends told me that her own brother spent his free time when he was going to university bagging for a big grocery store. She said that some days around lunchtime, she'd go into that grocery store just to give her brother half of her lunch because he made so little dough on tips. Some days he couldn't even buy lunch. By the way, her brother graduated as an industrial engineer and has a pretty good job now. But he suffered all the way through college and barely had enough to eat. So anyway, after I found that out, I developed a little soft spot for those baggers. But I still resist having those bagger guys take the stuff out to the car and put it in my trunk. I do let them pack my cart, though, and I hand them the change right there. A tip that works out to under a buck, usually, but anyway, they do flash a genuine smile and are happy about it. Who knows, maybe only one out of five people tip them. By the way, if you come down here to Latin America, especially off the Gringo Trail, you'll see lots of little lunch counters that serve breakfast, lunch, even dinners for $2 or less. Now, you won't see any gringos and expats eating there, though the occasional scruffy backpacker will find a joint like that and chow down. So if you tip one of those guys 50 or 75 cents, that's a half a lunch already. By the way, after I found out those guys do not get a salary, they only work for tips, I asked my girlfriend's brother who were the best and worst tippers, as if I didn't know already. He said, of course, the gringos and expats. He said, Latinos are bad tippers, with the exception being very old gray-haired ladies who often are pretty slow-moving and really do need the help. They really do appreciate you bringing their stuff to the car. He said, you'd be surprised how well they tip, even if they're not well off at all, and you can tell that by what they're buying, what he's packing in their bags and putting in their carts. By the way, he said there were a couple of regulars, old ladies who lived in the neighborhood two or three blocks away, and he'd take the groceries all the way to their houses. He'd just walk the cart there. the ladies didn't have cars, but they didn't want to take a taxi three blocks either. He said oftentimes the ladies would make him a cup of coffee and give him cookies. There are some lonely old people out there just longing for a conversation with anyone. That's right, loneliness. Yeah, well, it's an epidemic up in the States. Down here in Latin America, not so much. Because down here, extended families generally live in the same house. But I digress as usual. Where were we? Oh, yeah, tipping. And the worst tippers, my girlfriend's brother, the ex-bagger, says, upscale Latina moms with entitled kids. They got the money to buy junk food and anything else their kids want in the store. He says often the kids are opening up and eating junk food and chocolate right at the checkout counter. And all I'd get out of it, he said, was maybe a 10 centavo, a 10 cent tip. Oh, and he says backpackers never tip either. Well, he didn't have to tell me that. So the moral of that story is do tip those guys. That's the only dough they make. By the way, speaking of backpackers, you know, the art of backpacking is nothing new. It's been around for thousands of years. Of course, they didn't call it backpacking, but even back in the days of Marco Polo, there were certain well-traveled roads and very cheap hostels you could stay at, but you'd have to share a room, or even a bed sometime, with a stranger. Yeah, that was a very common occurrence. People did it all the time, with no gender mixing either. Turns out if you were backpacking in the old days, traveling on the cheap, you could very well expect to sleep in the same bed with someone you'd never met before. Sounds pretty rough, pretty crude, but there was a certain kind of etiquette, even back then, that you had to conform to if you were staying at one of those hostels, so as not to ruffle any feathers, you know? And my, how backpacking habits and etiquette have changed. You know, when I'm researching and reading stuff, I come across some very obscure but very interesting things, too. How about this, for example? Did you know, I bet you didn't, in 1558, Florentine etiquette writer Giovanni del Casa recommended those who share a bed with a stranger at a hostel, they observe the following rules of etiquette. He's talking about the 16th century version of a backpacker sharing a bed in a hostel with a complete stranger, which happened quite often. He points out there's a certain etiquette to be observed. He says, it's not a good habit, for example, when you're in the bed with a stranger and you come across something disgusting in the sheets, as sometimes happens. He says it's not good form to turn at once to one's companion and point it out to him. It's not proper, he says, to hold out the stinking thing for him or another to smell or inspect. Even if you so desire, it's not recommended. You must resist that urge to lift the foul-smelling thing up to your nostrils or his. He says it's not good form to say, look here, sir, this stain here that stinks is not mine. What do you propose to do about it? So what do you suppose that was all about? Was he speaking to a tubercular guy hacking up phlegm? Yeah, that's right. He's talking about the 16th century backpacker's dilemma. When sharing a bed with someone you've never met, one must put up with and tolerate little inconveniences. Now, of course, in modern time, the etiquette rules for backpackers have certainly changed. Yep, it may have taken a couple hundred years, but backpacker etiquette has come a long way. Though I've never seen them spelled out in a formal way. Now, if you're a problem solver, I think there's a niche to be filled here. Someone needs to write a book or pamphlet outlining the rules of etiquette for backpackers. What do you think? Hey, you know, if I was a younger guy backpacking through Europe in my 20s, I think a rules of etiquette book for backpackers would go viral, don't you? Have one stuffed in each bedstand, along with the Gideon Bible, translated into four languages. They still have those Bibles in backpacker hostels, don't they? Now, I noticed in big commercial hotels like Sheraton's, Hilton's, and Holiday Inn's, they don't have a Bible in the room anymore. They certainly used to. I'd see them in hotel drawers and bedstands all the time. Though I have noticed in mom-and-pop boutique hotels, especially here in Latin America, in some places, you'd still see an old moldy Bible in the drawer. And man, I hate to admit it, but I'm old enough to remember alongside that Bible, there'd be an actual physical telephone book. Should I admit that? Hey, you know who are the least backpackingest people in the world? Take a guess. You might say the Indians or the Chinese. Not true. It's the Japanese. In fact, they've got a huge group of people, millions, who advocate just the opposite. According to Japanese sociologists, up to 1 million Japanese adults suffer what's called social withdrawal syndrome. Yeah, right, there's a syndrome for everything. And a shot or a pill from Pfizer to manage it, too. The only kicker is you got to take it the rest of your life. God, I hate Pfizer. I think everyone who works there ought to get vaxxed weekly. What do you think? Are you on board with that? Anyway, Japan has the least backpackingest people in the world. They have a group of people, up to 1 million sociologists say, called hikikomori. It's a club of people who refuse to leave their bedrooms, unless physically compelled to do so. Now, get this. It's not that they won't leave their homes. They won't even leave their bedrooms. The definition of a hikikomori is a person who cannot make connections with other people. They insist they cannot blend in with other people or groups. They're beyond anxious about what others might think of them, and thus stay locked up in their bedrooms for years. Most die alone. Turns out there's at least one in every Japanese family or extended family, and everyone knows who that guy is. I guess in the West we'd call that simply an agoraphobic. You know, I read about that term way back in high school, but I never personally knew an agoraphobe. That is, until I was in my early 20s and started working as an engineer across from my office. There were some other office buildings and a couple of stores, and every so often, wedged in between all those buildings was a pre-World War II house in pretty good condition. Well, right across the street, there was an Italian deli, and next door was one of those old pre-World War II houses. And every once in a while, I'd see a 50-something lady walk out on the porch in a pink bathrobe. She'd pop out really fast, go into the mailbox, pick up her mail, and jump right back into the house. Well, that went on for a couple of years, and one day, 2 or 3 years later, an ambulance pulled up, lights flashing, and they took the lady out on a stretcher. And of course, when that happens, a lot of people stop and stare and gape. I walked across the street to have a look, and I asked a guy who I saw cutting the grass there a couple of times. He was right out in front. I said, what happened? He said that was his mother. They think she had a heart attack. And if it wasn't her heart, he said, she'd certainly have a heart attack when she wakes up and realizes she's in the hospital. Because, he said, my mother hasn't left the house in 30 years. And that's when my young 20-something self knew that agoraphobia was a real thing. Enough said about that. All right, changing gears now. You longtime listeners might remember me telling a story about an English teacher couple I know in Guatemala. They both taught at a private helicopter school. They didn't know each other. They just met while they were teaching down there. Well, sparks flew. They got married, and he, being a biology major, somehow got into the shrimp farming business in Guatemala. Now, if you remember the story, you'll also remember that they sell millions of pounds of that stuff a year to the big markets up in the States. Yet the best part of the story is they do not eat any of that shrimp themselves, and they never let their kids eat it either, because they're just chock full of pesticides and antibiotics, and they live in their own poop. Sort of sad when you make a ton of money on a product you wouldn't use yourself. Anyway, after they explained the shrimp business to me, I was curious. I wanted to know it all. I made a point of never eating farmed shrimp again. I'll occasionally eat wild, fresh-caught shrimp. But it's getting harder and harder to find the stuff unless you're on the pier when the boats come in. And in the restaurants, they'll lie to you. They'll tell you it's wild-caught shrimp, and they have no idea if it is or not. And 99% of the time, it's not. Anyway, I'm revisiting this topic because an article just came out today. An international story with this headline, quote, Indian company sells contaminated shrimp to U.S. grocery stores, according to an insider whistleblower. Let me just paraphrase a little bit of it for you. It says, Josh Farinella had been working in the seafood industry for 8 years when he received an exotic job offer too lucrative to pass up, managing a shrimp factory in southern India. Salary, 300 grand, more than double what he was making previously. But he said just a few months into the job, and he arrived in October 2023, he became deeply disturbed by what he was witnessing. His new company, Choice Canning, supplies shrimp to U.S. major grocery chains, Walmart, Aldi, ShopRite, and many others. His new company touted state-of-the-art processing plant and a commitment to international standards of quality. All that nice rhetoric stamped on each and every box of the product. Farinella said he soon discovered Choice Canning operated unsanitary off-site peeling sheds and routinely approved the export of shrimp that was heavily tainted with antibiotics, well beyond U.S. safety standards in violation of U.S. food safety laws. Yeah, right, and if you have any confidence in U.S. food safety laws, I've got a new kind of shit coin to sell you. Anyway, the article goes on to say the company's treatment of workers was equally jarring to Mr. Fernella. Migrant workers rarely had a day off and slept in overcrowded, bug-infested dorms and were restricted from leaving the company's walled-off compound. Unbeknownst to others at the company, though, Fernella recorded conversations with senior leadership and captured secret video footage of the conditions at the plant at the off-site illegal peeling facility. He says, quote, "Customers need to understand what they've been purchasing is a contaminated product that was made by people working under terribly unhygienic and unsanitary conditions." He says consumers must understand this is an industry-wide problem, not just at this particular plant. The disturbing fact is Americans love shrimp. It's the most consumed type of seafood in the U.S., and 40% of all shrimp comes from India. The article finishes off by saying Farinella's allegations are part of a larger systemic problem within the entire shrimp industry. The report, by the way, was based on interviews with more than 150 workers. So it's not just a one-off problem. Now, if you think the U.S. FDA cares about this problem at all, listen to this. It says the European Union samples 50% of all shrimp from India and other countries. They do tests for antibiotic traces. Meanwhile, the FDA in the U.S. inspects just 1% of shrimp imports. That's 1% inspected compared to Europe's 50% inspections. And even at that, they refused 51 shiploads of shrimp in 2023. And 70% of those over the limit of antibiotics involve shrimp exported from India. If you think the shrimp you're eating are contaminated and tainted, believe me, you don't want to know about tilapia. Speaking of contaminated stuff to keep away from, for you guys and gals out there who take this contaminated bottled water thing kind of lightly, thinking, you know, if you can buy bottled water in a store, it must be good. They must have checked it out or some agency checked it out. Well, listen to this brand new report from Ecuador's biggest news source. So now we're talking about bottled water in Latin America. It says, in Ecuador, the Agencia Nacional de Regulación Control y Vigilancia Sanitaria, ARCSA, has detected high levels of contamination and bacteria in 7 brands of water sold in local Ecuador food markets. Some of these water brands, like Fresh Water and Your Clean Water, have irony built into their names. It also goes on to say all 7 of these water brands had high levels of E. coli and Pseudomonas aeruginosa, which are bacteria that provoke health conditions such as stomach aches, intestinal problems, urinary tract infections, and skin infections, and more. It says you can look up these contaminated brands on the site www.controlsanitario.gov.ec, which I did, and here are the 7 contaminated water products that you can buy anywhere in Ecuador. Fresh Water, Agua Vital, Eco Vital, Your Clean Water, Eclipse, and said agua. Another thing you should know is that these are not the small 500 milliliter bottles, you know, the small bottles you buy in stores. These are the big 5-gallon plastic carboy jugs, or garrafones, that you load into kitchen water dispensers. Now, if you noticed here, they didn't mention a single thing about micro or nanoplastics, which are all the rage these days, right? You see articles about those things everywhere. Well, there you have another example of lag time, severe lag time. They're not even talking about plastics and nanoplastic contamination. By the way, those big 5-gallon jugs you see in every corner market and tienda, that's how almost all Latin American families buy their water. Of course, when people are out to lunch or at a restaurant, they drink out of those small 500 milliliter plastic bottles. But the point is here just to wise you up on those big 5-gallon jugs you buy. Oh, and a lot of neighborhoods have home delivery service. A big truck will pull up and drop off a few of those things a couple times a week. You trade them for the empties. Bad, bad idea, though, for the plastics that weep out of those things and you end up drinking. The problem's easily and permanently solved, though. You can buy those jugs. Just dump that water into a decent purifier and you're all set. But never, ever drink that stuff straight or cook with it. And, you know, people say, Johnny, what do you do when you go to a restaurant? That's all they have is plastic bottled water. And, of course, they're cooking with water out of a plastic jug, too. Well, you can't do anything about their cooking methods. You have to kind of close your eyes to that. But you can buy the expensive bottled water that comes in glass bottles, like Pellegrino, Perrier, and others. Now, how much of that went through plastic tubes and containers in the bottling process, we'll never know. But at least it hasn't been sitting in a crate or on a pallet in plastic bottles in a warehouse for weeks and weeks at a time. It's good to know, for however long it's stored, at least it's in glass bottles. Now, you probably heard me say I keep a couple of glass bottles of pure water in my car. Don't think I haven't tried to tote a bottle or two of that into a restaurant now and again. I'm not embarrassed to do that. I don't care what the management thinks. It's my water. I know it's pure and good. I filtered it myself. But unfortunately, I learned in a hurry, when I do that, the girlfriend gets embarrassed. She does not like it when I bring my own water into a restaurant. Makes me look cheap, and by extension, her. My standard comeback was, look, if you bring a baby into a restaurant, you bring the formula in a bottle with you, right? But no dice, she didn't buy that. So the compromise has been that I buy water for myself in a restaurant in glass bottles. You know, Perrier, Pellegrino, and others. I know, it's very expensive water. Especially when I've got a couple of bottles of extra pure water, virtually free water too, sitting in my car right out in the parking lot. Sure, it's a compromise, but it beats getting into a dust-up with a girlfriend. All right, moving on. Let's take an email from the original Dave. Dave number one. He says, hi, Johnny. Dave number one, except no substitutes, is back again. Imposters, you know who you are. We'll just have to wait in line because Dave number one's chiming in. He says, Johnny, about that show you just did about dogs. I have a secret weapon to avoid people's annoying untrained dogs myself. It works very well to get the dogs to stay away from you, and it's discreet. It's an ultrasonic dog training device. It emits a high-frequency sound that only dogs can hear, and dogs hate it. So they'll move quickly away and stop barking. Dave says these devices have been around a while, and they used to be bulky and require a 9-volt battery. They would fit in your pocket, but were kind of bulky and hard to hide. Now, on Amazon, there are small devices that easily fit in your pocket, where they can be charged and recharged like a cell phone. And they're stealthy, too. When I'm at my sister's house and her annoying, undisciplined dogs bother me, I hit that button. And the doggone dogs are gone, doggone it. However, I'm still looking for such a device with a hold button so that I don't have to keep my finger on the button all the time. That would be a great feature when I'm walking in areas with low-class people who allow their dogs to bark constantly. As we know, Johnny, low-class people come in all income levels. As far as untrained dogs, as much as I would like to silence them, I do feel sorry for them since their crappy owners never take them for walks and feed them cheap, crappy dog food like Walmart no-name dog food. Dave number one says he also has a dog barking deterrent device that looks like a birdhouse and hangs in a tree that shoots ultrasonic pulses into the neighbor's yard that keeps their unruly dogs from barking too. In fact, he says, I saw a YouTube video where a guy hooked up one of those devices to an amplifier and had an array of speakers pointing towards his neighbor's yard to quiet their pack of dogs. Well, there's more to Dave's letter. I'll get to it. Dave, you read my mind. I almost bought one of those things, the one you hang on a tree. And the ultrasonic pocket device, man, I was looking at those too. Never got around to buying one because the dogs in my neighborhood that are annoying are quite far away. You know how you can hear a dog barking way in the distance and you think, oh man, when is he going to shut up? Doesn't he ever sleep? And I was thinking, unfortunately, one of those sonic devices wouldn't project that far. We're talking blocks and blocks away. And when you're living out in the boonies, you can hear sounds from dogs and driveway chickens and kids from such a distance you can't even pinpoint where they're coming from. Sometimes I'm thinking, you know, there's got to be a way to shut up those crowing roosters, too. Maybe at night when the sun goes down, there's some kind of clip or rubber band you could put around their beak. Who knows? There's got to be a way to shut those guys up. Because, you know, when a rooster crows at 4 a.m, man, I'm thinking, where's that pellet gun when you need it? Anyway, now we're on to the second part of Dave's email. He says, here's a topic that some of your audience might be interested in. Alternative healthcare. Specifically colon cleansing or colonics in Latin America. He says, since bidets and Montezuma's revenge, etc. have been discussed extensively on the show, I think it's safe to go down this new rabbit hole, or up another kind of hole, I suppose, known as colonics. As you probably know, Johnny, it's all about putting a hose up into the large intestine. It's filled with water, and the stuff that's stuck up there is somehow gently removed. He says the hoses are disposable and not reused for other patients. Thank Buddha for that. Could that be why Buddha is always smiling? The fact is, Johnny, modern processed foods get stuck up in our large intestine and cause all kinds of problems. It's not just a first world problem either. I've seen colon cleansing clinics all around Latin America. He says, I used to go to a place in Guatemala City that used a colonic machine that was made in the U.S. That place went out of business, though. The clinic I go to now uses a not-so-fancy machine, but it does the job. They use cold water instead of body temperature water, and they alternate the cold water with coffee. Yes, this clinic pumps coffee into my large intestine. Thing is, Johnny, I've never had coffee the traditional way. So if the topic of coffee comes up in conversation, I can truthfully answer that Guatemalan coffee helps me get up and go. By the way, Johnny, last time I went to this clinic for a colonic, in the middle of the procedure, they told me I had intestinal parasites. Then the clinician filled me up and drained me again and said, want to have a look? I think we'll skip over that part. Anyway, let's just say I was very happy to have them out of me. Finally, Johnny, speaking of alternative health, he says, have you ever seen a naturopathic doctor in Central America? He says, when I attended your seminar, one of your attendees happened to be a naturopathic doctor. What I like is that naturopathic doctors identify the lifestyle changes that a patient needs to be healthy and base their treatments on the avoidance of use of industrial chemical-based medications. All the best, Johnny Sign, Dave, number one. All right, Dave, thanks for that good info there. And yes, Dave, you're right, there are quite a few naturopathic doctors here in Latin America. And of course, if you go to a stem cell clinic here in Latin America, most of the doctors there advertise themselves as naturopathic doctors. They rarely resort to traditional pharmaceuticals. They always suggest a natural approach first. Now, speaking of past Expat Insider Seminar attendees like Dave, you know, I always get good feedback after the seminar from all the attendees. Comments trickle in days and weeks after the seminar. Some of those comments are rather fun and interesting, like this one. We won't say who it's from, but he says, Johnny, my first trip to Latin America off the tourist trail was your seminar. It was a revelation. Like my dear old dad once said, it's like seeing a new lover naked for the very first time. It's the make or break moment for any relationship. In the case of the seminar and Latin America in general, I'm smitten. I saw my naked new lover in the stark light of day, and I'm all in. All right, that's from our mystery seminar attendee. His take, not mine.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.